Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host, and I'll be escorting you once again about the battle space of what I call the war of ideas. And we have a terrific lineup today for that purpose. Brigitte Gabriel of Act for America fame, author, television star. You've seen her on Fox and many other places talking about the threat from Sharia. And we'll get into the question of how that threat in the form of blasphemy laws is now translating into submission on the part of, among others, our United States armed forces in Afghanistan, and what that might mean to our enemies and in turn to you. Segment three, we'll be talking with Dr. James Carafano of the Heritage Foundation about a brand new study about what it will take to provide for the national security of the United States in the years ahead. A brand new report has been issued by him and his colleagues, and we'll be getting a hot off the press's assessment of how we're doing and what Congress is likely to do, perhaps to make things worse. Segment four, Andy McCarthy joins us to talk about the dramatic about-face by the Obama administration on the trial of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and his friends. Turns out it won't be happening in New York City after all. Why the turnabout? Isn't that a fabulous thing? Also, we'll be getting a take from Andy about the Gang of Three. United States senators who were for Muammar Gaddafi before they were against him. A fascinating insight into Congress at its worst. But first, some thoughts from me about the budget and the financial reordering that are now underway in Washington and perhaps elsewhere around the world. The focus at the moment, of course, is on Congressman Paul Ryan, the chairman of the House Budget Committee, one of the true rising stars in the House of Representatives and the Republican Party more generally, who unveiled today a blueprint for how he would recommend the budget deficit be brought under control. He is proposing a plan that he says would cut some $4 trillion. That's T as in terrific. $4 trillion from the expenditures that the United States government would otherwise make over the next 10 years or so. It involves very dramatic changes in entitlement programs, real reform, arguably for the first time in a very long time there. It's unquestionably a courageous effort to get our financial house in order. And while one can differ, and I'm sure there will be a lot of differing about particulars of the Ryan program, it's likely to become the sort of touchstone for what comes next in both the House of Representatives and in the Congress more generally, and perhaps one of the most influential documents in the coming presidential elections as well, as it will be clearly a point of contrast with an Obama administration that seems, well, willing to pay lip service to the need to get our financial house in order, but not too keen on doing much about it, except possibly on the backs of the United States military. And as we'll be talking about with Jim Carafano shortly, that's not a good plan. It's not sustainable. We will wind up paying far more in the end if we go down that road. I wanted to contrast this approach by Paul Ryan, working in a transparent way inside the United States Congress to remedy what is clearly a difficult financial circumstance for our country, with an approach that George Soros is currently engaged in a most non-transparent way, as much of his activities are. Thanks to Dan Gaynor, vice president at the marvelous Media Research Center, founded and run by Brent Bozell, we have an insight into what George Soros is about in the next few days. In fact, on the 8th of April, he is convening a meeting which he envisions as a kind of new Bretton Woods, which is to say a vehicle for essentially establishing what he calls, quote, a grand bargain that rearranges the entire financial order, unquote. That is to say, not just the financial circumstances of the United States, but the whole world. And indeed, it is a project that he has been massively investing in, George Soros, and has successfully, it seems, pulled together for the purpose of chartering a transforming of the order that was essentially put in place at the original Bretton Woods after the end of World War II, with pretty clearly the express purpose, at least in George Soros's mind, of diminishing the U.S. role and influence in favor of a new multilateral system. We know this in part because of an op-ed that he wrote several years ago now, in November 2009, that made broad outlines of the Soros ambition known, if not the particulars of how he's going about it. In that op-ed, he argued that the greatest threat to the open society, as he puts it, is the capitalist threat. He argued that we need a global sheriff. And if that doesn't sound ominous, I don't know what does. And he very explicitly is saying we need to reorganize the world order with a view, by the way, to extending beyond the financial system to reordering the UN as well, with very clearly the idea of diminishing the United States and raising up the People's Republic of China and other undeveloped or developing nations, which he thinks in his new world order ought to be treated as equals. And for this purpose, he is convening under the auspices of an organization that he has given some $50 million to underwrite, presumably both its operations and this event on the 8th of April, a group called the Institute for New Economic Thinking, which, as Dan Gaynor points out, he has something of a conflict of interest in, because he's both massively funding it and he's very clearly trying to direct its activities. And what he has in the way of helpmates in all of this are several folks who are well-established names in national and international economic affairs, but all of whom seem to share his idea that there needs to be a diminishing of the United States and a raising up of rivals. These include, as helpmates, Paul Volcker, former chairman of the Federal Reserve Board and now the chairman of President Obama's Economic Advisory Board, Jeffrey Sachs of Harvard University, a longtime champion of the redistribution of wealth and various other multilateralist initiatives, including the Millennium Project of the United Nations, for which he's garnered also $50 million from George Soros. And then there's Joseph Stiglitz, formerly of the World Bank. These are folks who are enlisting, along with some 1,200 other organizations, we're told, George Soros has funded with some $7 billion that he has made available to various open society foundations. I don't know about you folks, but this does not sound like the kind of activity that will serve and advance America's interests. In fact, I think it will be quite inimical to them. What you'd expect from a man I consider to be evil incarnate. We'll be following it closely, as I hope will you, here at Secure Freedom Radio. Next up, though, Brigitte Gabrielle on Sharia and its blasphemy laws. What they mean for you.
First line of defense in the war of ideas. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
My name is Sunday Hollis, and I totally lost the cravings for sweets. I totally lost the cravings for bread, even meat. And some people, you know, you would see people say, oh, well, you're eating a salad because you're trying to diet, but you just don't have a taste for any of the junk anymore. And it is so, so, so true. I'm thinking this is something that the celebrities are using. They're just not giving the meta system the credit for it. I've tried everything under the sun, and this is the only product that I have even called the company and asked them, could I sell it for them? This is a product where you can actually use the word awesome. I mean, and it is the whole essence of the word awesome.
Don't wait another minute to start losing weight. Call Judy Singer's The Meta System at 1-800-711-JUDY. That's 1-800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Michael Medved is asking Congress to simplify the corporate tax code for good reason.
This is a real problem. Of the 500 top Fortune companies, nearly 100 pay no taxes because they use various dodges
that have been written into the law by lobbyists.
And the President of the United States and Paul Ryan, the House Budget Chair,
and John Boehner, the Speaker of the House,
everybody ought to work together to get rid of this stuff.
It's just wrong.
The Michael Medved Show. Afternoons from 3 to 6 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, joined by the absolutely fabulous Brigitte Gabrielle. She is the founder and president of Act for America, an organization I consider to be absolutely indispensable, which she formed after 9/11 with a view to trying to help inform our countrymen about the threat posed by what I think of as Sharia, and that has manifested itself both through violent forms and through stealthy forms. And there's just nobody who is with her team doing a better job of keeping on top of this and helping the rest of us understand it than Brigitte. She is also, I want to quickly say, the author of They Must Be Stopped: Why We Must Defeat Radical Islam and How We Can Do It. Brigitte, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. As always, it's great to have you with us.
Thank you, Frank. The pleasure is mine.
Let's start with a term that is thrown around a lot, particularly in the Muslim world, with which you were intimately familiar from your days in your native Lebanon, namely blasphemy. And the effort to impose certain blasphemy laws under Sharia on on all of us. Tell us what that's about and this organization of the Islamic Conference and its agenda with respect to it.
Well, because Islam is considered as the superior religion above all else, and also Muslims are considered the superior people above all others, therefore, because Islam is the best thing out there, no other religion or people can insult it, defame it, discuss it, debate it, question it, or question the Prophet himself, or insult any of the followers of Islam. And this is how Muslims view themselves. And this is why, as Islam grew and spread throughout Arabia, in the beginning, Christians and Jews became infidels. They became dhimmi, or second-class citizens. They were not allowed to build churches. They were not allowed to ring church bells. They had to pay the jizya or the protection tax to buy their protection as second-class citizens in Islam. And right now, as we see the rise of Islam again worldwide, starting in 1928 with the Muslim Brotherhood as a response to the ending of the Islamic Caliphate in 1924 and their resentment toward Christendom, which in their eyes defeated Islam. And now as the momentum is picking up, especially after Khomeini took power in 1979 with the Iranian Revolution, and now especially as the Muslim Brotherhood organizes with the oil wealth in Saudi Arabia funding all these terrorist organizations and group and spreading their authentic version of Islam, they are now going back to influencing the world and putting laws to how you should treat Islam. In other words, remember your place. We are better than you are. You can criticize your own religion. You can burn your own books. You can insult each other, discussing your own religions. However, you as infidels cannot criticize our religion, Islam, cannot write anything badly, even looking at our Quran or debating it, because we consider it supreme and you're not allowed to touch it. Literally not allowed to touch it. Actually, our soldiers are instructed overseas when they handle the Quran, especially in Gitmo, in giving it to the detainees, they have to be wearing gloves because infidels are considered filth. And a filthy person or a cursed person, the swines and the apes and the pigs, in the eyes of Islam, which is the Christians and the Jews, cannot even touch the Quran. And that's why our soldiers have to wear gloves in handling the Quran when they're handing it to the inmates.
Yeah. We're talking with Brigitte Gabrielle of Act for America. And I that's exactly where I wanted to go with you on this, Brigitte, is, as you say, this is kind of the leading edge. This blasphemy business, the imposition of certain requirements for submission on all others, long before they're actually conquered. And in that regard, I just wanted to get your take on the response of General David Petraeus, the commander of U.S. forces in Afghanistan at the moment, to the murder of a number of U.N. workers, seven, I believe, in the aftermath of this Bible burning by a pastor by the name of Terry Jones down in Florida. And I just would like to get your sense of going beyond, you know, the kid glove treatment of the Holy Quran, as General Petraeus put it. Are you seeing in his response and more generally in the sort of rules that are being applied to our forces in Afghanistan, and I presume in Iraq as well, under this counterinsurgency manual of the generals, evidence of this kind of submissive behavior? And if so, how is the enemy likely to be taking that?
Well, we have been empowering our enemy way before now. I mean, look, our soldiers who, when we had our base in Saudi Arabia before we moved it to Bahrain, our soldiers could not even have their own Bibles to pray at our own bases. And here we were there to protect their behind. So we already set precedent to them that, okay, we acknowledge that you are superior than us. And when you are dealing with a religion like Islam, you give it an inch, they take the whole shebang. We are doing the same thing in Bahrain. We're doing the same thing in anywhere in the Islamic world. While in our eyes, we are respecting their values and their culture, they don't look at it that way. And I think with this whole burning of the Quran issue, and let me be very clear, I do not believe that that we should burn any books. I believe we should learn from books. However, I believe that we in America, what made America great, America is the greatest nation in the world, most powerful nation, most prosperous nation on earth, because of our freedoms, because we have the freedom of expression, because we have the freedom of speech, because we have the freedom of religion. That's what made us great. And I think this could have been used as a teaching moment to the Islamic world, to tell the Muslim world, listen, we may not agree with what this pastor, Pastor Jones, did in Florida, but he has the right in our country, our under our constitution, to do so. And that's what makes America great. And that's why we are successful. When you compare it with the Middle East, those people in the Islamic world do not have the freedom to express themselves, do not have the freedom to scrutinize a book or a leader or a government. And this is exactly how they end up with corrupt government. And this is exactly where they end up with economic chaos and misery. And until they learn to look at other societies and what makes them successful and learn from that, they're going to be doomed to continue on the path that they are on. And also, this could be used by the Muslims in America, who supposedly are moderate, who supposedly are Americans, who supposedly respect our constitution and our rights, to basically come together and make a statement to the Muslims in the Middle East saying, listen, this is our constitution, even though we may not agree with this pastor, but he has the right to do so.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. We're talking with Brigitte Gabriel, who, in addition to the book I've already mentioned, They Must Be Stopped, Why We Must Defeat Radical Islam and How We Can Do It, is also the author of Because They Hate, and of course the founder of Act for America. You can also find her on her own television program now, I'm very pleased to say, with her colleague Guy Rogers. I've had the chance of being on it myself. It's a terrific show, and I commend it to all of you. Brigitte, we've only got 2 minutes left. Very quickly, let me set this up and let you run. We have seen in other ways the effort to sort of impose this Sharia program on us and to force us to submit to it. One that's particularly worrying to me is what's going on in some of our courts, including one down in Florida again in recent weeks, where a judge said Muslims had to have Sharia law used to adjudicate a difference rather than Florida secular law. Tell us, as you look at this sort of universe of efforts being made through both violent means and stealthy ones to compel us to acquiesce, to subordinate our constitution, our way of life, our freedoms, and so on to this this other very, very unconstitutional agenda, what do you tell people, in a minute, they can do to help keep this from going the wrong way?
I tell them, get involved. I created an organization called Act for America. We didn't name the organization Think About America or Hope for America or Wish for America, but Act for America. Because if people are listening to this broadcast without taking any action, they might as well be watching Dancing with the Stars because they are just getting entertained. I realized as I started speaking out after September 11th for years that while education is important, education is not sufficient. Education must be coupled with action. And that's why we launched Act for America nationwide. Act for America right now has 170,000 members and 530 chapters nationwide. And I urge our listeners to go to our website and sign up to get our emails and action alert. Sign up to join a chapter in your community so you can become a voice affecting your community and our nation.
Great.
Because
advice.
We want to be able to reach you when we are talking to a legislator in your community to present laws to stop Sharia from coming to your community. We want to be able to reach you so you can make that phone call.
And we have to stop you right now. Brigitte Gabriel, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for your inspiration. Thanks for your leadership. And come back to us again soon.
Thank you.
Next up, Andy McCarthy on Khalid Sheikh Mohammed getting tried in Gitmo. And that's a good thing.
To SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hi, NBA forward Kevin Durant from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Here with Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
And that's a slam dunk.
Whether you like to shoot hoops like me, skateboard, ride a bike,
or dance on your roof, just move it your way.
For an hour a day. Because moving every day puts you on the offense towards a stronger you.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Bugs.
So be a player.
Be a player.
Get up, play, and move it your way. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
You said it at www.letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
In 1966 in Anchorage, Alaska, a talented child was born. He would go on to be one out of only 11 Alaskans to make it to the major leagues. The odds of him striking out more than 3,000 hitters? 1 in 33 million. The odds of this pitcher being selected to the Major League Baseball All-Star Game 6 times? 1 in 48 million. The odds of this fast-balling philanthropist winning the World Series 3 times? 1 in 3 million. The odds of this man having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Hi, I'm Kurt Schilling. Learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Autism is getting closer to home. From 1 in 5,000 only 20 years ago, today 1 in 110 children are diagnosed. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
What are you doing?
Filling out a loan application.
I can help you get approved, you know.
Really? How?
With this.
A bag of sand?
It's not a bag, it's a pouch. And it's not sand, it's credit fairy dust.
Credit fairy dust?
Yes, I sprinkle some fairy dust on the application, and your credit rating magically improves.
There's no such thing as the credit fairy.
An unbeliever now. But what will you think when your loan is approved?
I'll think my credit score improved because I paid my bills on time, kept my credit card balances low, and only opened a new card if I really needed it.
It's the dust.
It's sand.
Don't deny the credit fairy.
There's no magic to improving your credit, but there is help, and it's free. Go to creditfairy.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the Consumer Bankers Foundation, the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights Education Fund, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We are joined by Jim Carafano. He is the grand poobah on national security matters at the Heritage Foundation, has been working for quite a number of years there and in both uniform and civilian life on the vital national security decisions of our time. And Jim, it's always great to have you with us, especially on an occasion like this, which is the day you have unveiled a new report by the Heritage Foundation, in which you are one of the principal authors, entitled A Strong National Defense, the Armed Forces America Needs, and What They Will Cost. Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio.
Hey, it's good to be with you.
Tell us about this new study and what you found against the backdrop of Paul Ryan's budget on Capitol Hill and much other thrashing that's going on around Washington at the moment on defense spending.
Sure. And the paper is at our website, heritage.org. So what we did is, and this is actually an interesting exercise, because what we discovered is if you actually read all the stuff the government puts out on, you know, what do we have, and it's actually very confusing, and I think intentionally so. And so what members on both sides of the aisle in Congress really asked us is, let us have an adult conversation about this. Just tell us what do we have, why we have it, and how much it costs. And so that, in a sense, is what the paper is intended to do. What we do is we go around the world and we identify all the critical things everybody expects defense to do. We say, look, here's the forces that we have to do those things, and here's how much it costs. And it's a very simple, but I think a very, very dramatic exercise.
Well, it is, and I had the opportunity, as you know, to participate in a presentation you made with several of your colleagues, including Mackenzie England, one of our favorites here at Secure Freedom Radio, and also Kim Holmes there, the Vice President at Heritage, about this report with several of the members of the press. And what you laid out was not only the sort of yawning requirements that we face, but also the very worrying shortfalls that are beginning to emerge. Let's talk a little bit about those as we look at the budget, not in sort of an abstract, you know, top-line number, but in terms of real capabilities that you and your colleagues at the Heritage Foundation, Jim Carafano, have identified as needed to meet the real challenges that we're facing today and that are in prospect tomorrow.
Well, sure. I mean, a couple areas where clearly we don't even have enough force for what's coming down the pike. As we look at the rise of China China's a potential competitor, and just being able to keep pace with that and to prevent a war by having an adequate conventional deterrent against China, that's a looming problem, which quite honestly our Defense Department hasn't addressed. We look at the homeland, and to me this is actually one of the most scandalous things, is all these reports talk about how, okay, the most important thing, of course, is the defense of our homeland. But you actually look at what the military has done, is it's less and less and less. So that's a gaping area. And then we look at emerging areas like cybersecurity. All of these are kind of get very flowering language and lots of adjectives. But when you actually look at the force structure, there's nothing really in there to do that. And then you add that, you know, we've been a nation at war for almost a decade. You've got to fix all that stuff. And, you know, we underfunded defense all through the Clinton years. And so you kind of add that up, and it's a pretty big butcher's bill.
Yeah. We're talking with Dr. Jim Carafano, Lieutenant Colonel, United States Army, retired, West Point graduate, author, among other things, of Private Sector Public Wars, Contracting in Combat, Iraq, Afghanistan, and Future Conflicts, as well as this brand new report. And I really commend it to you all, folks. It is short. It is about 30 pages long. It has what you really need to know in terms of both the kinds of threats that are emerging in five different areas around the world and the kinds of capabilities that we have in place today and that we're likely to need in the future. It's, in short, a very user-friendly, easily accessible document for grappling with the sorts of challenges that we're facing at the moment. And Jim, I just want to drill down for a second on something that you talked about this morning and you sort of alluded to there a moment ago. We have had some hard experience with underfunding. In fact, I think you used the term this morning, hollowing out the military. Give us just a quick course on some of those previous experiences and what they bespeak about the situation we find ourselves in today.
Well, sure. I mean, and typically this is what happens, is you come into a period where the wars are winding down, people are looking at fiscal issues, trying to balance the budget, and you say, well, we've got these problems, these challenges, and what they do is they just shrug their shoulders and say, okay, yeah, but I'm not going to worry about it. And what happens is your military goes hollow. So you have to have three things in order to keep a force healthy. Is you have to pay for current operations, you have to maintain a trained and ready force, and you have to invest to keep the force, you know, ready for the future. And if you don't do those three things, is what you wind up with what's called this capabilities mission mismatch. So we outline all these things you have to do in the world that everybody, liberal, Republican, Democrat, conservative, you know, acknowledges that, yeah, those are things we expect the American defense to do. But then if you don't have the capability to actually do that, you have this yawning gap. And what happens is nobody takes missions off the table. Right? But it's like if you build, added on your house, but you never updated your insurance for your homeowner's coverage. So when you started, you had a $50,000 house. Now you have a $500,000 house, but you only have $50,000 worth of homeowner's insurance. And then the house burns down and everybody's standing there going, well, how did that happen?
No.
Well, that's what we're doing with the military. We're not taking any missions off the table.
No.
And we're letting our military atrophy.
Yeah. Jim, to go to the top line, I guess, or bottom line, as the case may be, you've indicated in this new report that the administration has a core defense budget about $585 billion for fiscal year 2012. That does not include the funding for operations in Iraq and Afghanistan. And you suggest that, by contrast, if we are going to have the sort of programs funded properly that are needed to meet the capabilities requirements, we should have approximately $720 billion per year for the five-year period from 2012 to 2016. I touched on Paul Ryan's new template that was unveiled today, among other budget exercises. Where does this kind of program square, if at all, with the sorts of budget realities that we're facing on the Hill?
Well, Ryan's budget comes up short, but in large part that's because, in a sense, he relied on, you know, what the Pentagon gave him, which is, I suppose, understandable. But you have to understand what the Pentagon has been doing, and what Secretary Gates has been really doing, is lying to the American people and really underselling future requirements, you know, portraying efficiencies that really aren't there. And in a sense, I think they're really being sold a bill of goods. Now, what we do in this report is we not just say, look, this is what you need, but we also tell you how to pay for it. And we put the fiscal challenge in context, and we go through and we say, look, where can you find real efficiencies, and really take fraud, waste, and abuse out of the Pentagon and really get your value for dollars? So it's not like we're just saying, here's a wish list and, you know, we know that the government's going broke and we're overspending. You know, we said, look, here is what you need for, which arguably the only thing in the Constitution that the Constitution specifically says you have to do, which is to provide for the common defense. But we also kind of provide a blueprint on how you afford that. Now, the good thing about the Ryan budget, I think, is it really does start an adult conversation. That budget really does look at some of the really, you know, stupid and physically irresponsible things we're doing. And what I hope is, if people take that budget seriously and they start to address some of the issues in runaway government spending, that's going to really kind of free up the space for people to really start to have an honest and adult conversation about what it takes to protect us. Look, we're going to spend this money. The question is, are we going to spend a reasonable amount now to maintain a trained and ready force, or are we going to expend an exorbitant amount later when we have to go defend ourselves anyway, and we're throwing people into combat without the equipment and the resources they need, and then we're spending like a drunken sailor trying to catch up.
Yeah, and spending in a currency that we value even more than money, and that is the lives of people unnecessarily, not only put in harm's way, but in many cases their lives are sacrificed. Jim Carafano, I'm so glad you ended on that note, because this really is the crux of the matter. I think we've learned from those previous historical experiences, not only the ones where we've hollowed out the military, but where we've wound up finding others inspired to act aggressively against us,
right,
because of what they've perceived as our weakness, as a pretext for war, or as least an inspiration for the kind of bloodletting that we can't afford. We must pay now in sensible ways to ensure we have the capability to deter that kind of aggression. Jim Carafano, thank you for your great work at the Heritage Foundation, that of the rest of your team. Keep it up. Keep coming back to us, please. We didn't get to missile defense. That's a whole other subject, and we'll come to you another time very soon.
Thanks for having me.
Next up, Andy McCarthy tells us about the new deal, the old deal, on Khalid Sheikh Mohammed.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
It is with sound mind and body that I, James Fredericks III, after fighting with all direct family members for decades, leave my entire fortune of $32 million to the one friend I had in the end, the package delivery guy, Matt Songer.
I had a feeling about this. Uh-huh. I'm rich. Oh, this cannot be happening.
Actually, it's not happening.
What?
And it never will.
I don't get it.
There aren't even people here. That's just one of those murmuring sound effects.
Seriously?
Listen, if you want to have money in your future, don't rely on luck.
Huh.
Put $10 away each month. Cook once in a while instead of eating out.
Okay.
Pay down your high-interest credit card.
Right.
Small changes today, big bucks tomorrow.
So, no inheritance?
No. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
And just to be clear, no inheritance, right?
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney.
My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home was built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Is there an epidemic in Washington? Hugh Hewitt has the diagnosis.
They don't understand the need for speed.
Oh, we'll get to it. Don't worry. We'll get it done. Open amendment process, blah, 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 blah.
Not in the least bit clued in to the sense of urgency, but I don't think the Beltway is.
I'm just beginning to think it is a Beltway disease.
Kind of an invisible wall separates them from what the people think.
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home,
or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff,
like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Real? What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, joined by Andy McCarthy, fresh from a recent debate he moderated with two of the country's eminent figures in the War of Ideas about Sharia, Dr. Zudi Jasser, man who appeared in the King hearings, and Robert Spencer, author and skeptic about Islam. We'll be visiting with you about all of that in a moment, Andy, but first I wanted to talk to you about the question of this reversal of the Obama administration on the Khalid Sheikh Mohammed trial.
Well, Frank, I think they've changed course because President Obama wants to be reelected, and that this is something that I think events have indicated that he needs to do if he's going to have any chance at all. I think if we talked about previously this sort of dog and pony show they did about a month ago, where they sent some White House briefers out to the 9/11 families to tell them that military commissions were going to be back in business. But it appeared that they didn't actually have any intention of really moving forward with the commission. Something
or with respect to KSM at that point.
Yeah, certainly with respect to KSM, but really whether there was going to be much action at all was seemed doubtful. It looked like it was basically a big feint in order to just try to get the issue to go away between, you know, now and the 2012 election. But I think something interesting happened a couple of weeks later, and that is the defense lawyers for the terrorists actually went to the convening authority, which is the body in the Defense Department that runs the military commissions, and asked for funding to resume the investigation based on the based on the White House's claim that the commissions were going to be back in business. And the convening authority denied them funding, saying that there is no case, and until, you know, the Justice Department moves and makes a determination that there's going to be a commission against the 9/11 plotters like KSM, there would be no money, no funding, or nothing. That prompted a spate of bad news for the administration, because every time this issue comes up, this is one of those 3-to-1, one of those 75-25 issues that every time it rears its ugly head and people start thinking that maybe the terrorists in Gitmo are headed for the civilian courts, there's a lot of unpopular downside for the Obama.
Yeah, bad press at the very least, yeah.
So I think they saw that episode and they said, look, we just can't sustain this for another 18 months to 2 years while we try to get reelected. We need to just cut
our losses. Yeah,
and I think that's exactly what.
Well, it's tragic that it's so cynical, rather than that they just saw the error of their ways. But I was listening to David Rifkin, a colleague of ours, who writes frequently in the Wall Street Journal with his colleague Lee Casey. He was interviewed by Bill Bennett this morning. I don't know if you heard him, but he made an interesting point, Andy McCarthy, that I just wanted to bounce off of you as a former federal prosecutor with some important notches in your belt and as author, of course, of Willful Blindness and The Grand Jihad, two very important books drawn from your experiences. But David Rifkin was expressing some concern that the kind of atrophying that has taken place in the military commissions system since the Obama administration essentially pulled the plug on them shortly after it came to office may take its toll on, at the very least, how rapidly this case may be prosecuted and possibly even on the outcome. Do you share that concern?
Well, I think, look, anything David and Lee say is a concern. If it concerns them, it concerns me, and I think that they would have they obviously have serious reasons for worrying about that. Let me give you my take, Frank. I actually went down about 2 weeks ago to talk to the prosecutors down in Washington, and I came out very upbeat. I thought that what they were being asked to do was much harder than what I was asked to do in the 90s. I mean,
were the prospective civilian prosecutors had it come to trial in the civilian courts?
No. These are the military.
I see.
Okay. Yeah. And the thing that impressed me about them the most is it was hard enough for me to do and for us in the civilian side to do the cases we had to do in the 90s. Nobody ever tried to stop us from doing our jobs. Basically, those guys have been stopped from doing their jobs for a couple of years, but they've continued to work very hard to whip the cases into shape. And I would point out to people that the only thing that hadn't happened in the KSM case when Obama pulled the plug on it in January of 2009 was the trial. They had spent 3 years doing a lot of hard work. They did thousands of pages of discovery. 100 motions were litigated before the judge, and that was why at that point in time, KSM and the others said that they wanted to plead guilty and proceed.
Yeah, and we're poised to do so.
Yeah, so I have hope that case will be
that they can pick it up and get it done. Well, let us all hope so, and with dispatch. Andy, let me turn to another topic quickly. You have written brilliantly, as you usually do, and with quite considerable vitriol, I think it's fair to say, about three senators who, as I put it earlier in the program, were for Muammar Gaddafi before they were against him. tell us about these guys and how this plays into the drama that's unfolding now with respect to Libya.
Yeah, this is, Frank, this is Senators Lieberman, Graham, and McCain, who were in the tent with Gaddafi about 18 months ago.
Literally.
Yes, literally, paying a visit to him in Tripoli, glowing over the wonderful new relationship between the United States and his regime. And I think most importantly, supporting the United States giving to Gaddafi military aid, in addition to other aid, which included, like, you know, civilian nuclear assistance and so on. So I'm just sort of floored that these guys have become, you know, the leading hawks on the idea that, you know, it's not just enough to defeat Gaddafi. I think Senator Graham's come out and said we should label him an enemy combatant so that we can kill him.
Drop a bomb on him. Yeah.
Yeah, right. And I it's important for people to understand there's been no intervening attack on the United States between the time these guys were in the tent and
right.
now.
It's the same bad guy he was then. Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it's unbelievable. Listen, Andy, before we let you go, and I know we have to momentarily, I would love to get your sense. I was not there, but I was very keenly interested in the event that you moderated, apparently, at the David Horowitz Freedom Center's weekend out in Santa Barbara last weekend, which featured a debate between two people I admire a great deal. Robert Spencer, the author of, among many other books, The Stealth Jihad, and Dr. Zudi Jasser, one of the most estimable Muslims reformers and recent witness in the King hearing on Capitol Hill. Tell us how that conversation went and what your takeaway was.
Well, I think I was very impressed by those two guys who, like you, I know and admire. And it's interesting that they come at – they're both ultimately on the same side, that is, against the Islamic radicalism. But they come at it from two very different perspectives. Zudi is really a Muslim reformer, and Robert is, to say the least, a skeptic about whether Islam is reformable. So I think that they had a very good back and forth on that point. And I think where we came away is that Robert doesn't discount the possibility that Islam could reform. I think he just thinks the chance of its happening is not as great as we'd like it to be. And Zudi is very upbeat and optimistic about the possibility of reform. But I think, you know, with due respect to him, discounts some of the things we're seeing, like, for example, the snapshot we got in Egypt a couple of weeks ago when in that referendum the radicals basically wiped out the so-called reformers and Democrats by a margin of about 77 to 23.
Yeah.
So I think
figuratively, for the moment, quite yep. possibly literally in the not-too-distant future. And that will be another day's topic, Andy McCarthy, with you as you follow these things so closely and, as I said, so brilliantly at National Review Online and in other outlets. We most appreciate your taking a few minutes every week to talk with us about them here and hope you'll do so again next week. In the meantime, be well, my friend. That's it for this installment of Secure Freedom Radio. I hope you'll be joining us again tomorrow, same time, same station, for more of what you absolutely need to know to secure your freedom and that of those you love. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks so much for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.